Good evening.
Hello, and here we are on part something or other.
I believe this is, I believe, well, it's part three of this
It's
discussion.
part three of this discussion. I might just put it up all as one thing because fuck it, I'm tired of that shit.
Yeah, do that.
So in the last little bit, what I was just saying was a piece about transparency, emotional transparency, processing, and why the Vulcan approach with using logic is very important, and it's something I appreciate because it gives me an opportunity to step back from acting out from a purely emotional reflex. I would like to believe that I am able to be discerning and careful and cautious and thoughtful in all of my dealings. That's not true because I'm a human being, and the way that this human being is built, emotional shit sometimes can be very strong. And the one way I have found outside of alcohol, which I do not use anymore, to manage those things when those emotional surges, when those feelings that can be so overwhelming, they manifest physically, are making me nuts, is to take a step back and say, okay, what is actually happening here? How much of this information is authentic? How much of this information is a story that you're telling yourself? Are you really connecting with the other person or people involved in this matter? Blah 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 blah. And part of the thing I think is very valuable in terms of being transparent from a submissive point of view is being able to do that and process it and come out with an actual series of words or a series of paragraphs on the page or however they can communicate that issue to someone else. In the case of a power exchange dynamic, the person to whom you're submitting really needs to know what the fuck is going on with you. And the idea that that doesn't flow back to you, so that I don't know, for example, if my dominant is pissed at me, pissed at the world, indifferent, whatever else. If I have no idea because it's a submissive or slave, I'm not permitted to question that or have that information because that would undermine their dominance. Then not so awesome. The processing part is vital.
It's a flaw. It's a flaw on the part of the dominant if they're not able to give the person under them context for the way that they're feeling. It's a partially, I feel like that was some strong language. I don't tend to
I
use
didn't.
that
I
kind of
wasn't.
language.
I see. I wasn't even gonna say anything. I was like, "Oh shit!" I'm like, "Don't say anything. You might go
No,
back and
no,
start like
I'm not gonna.
qualifying again."
I'm not gonna. I mean, I'm not gonna take it away, but I am gonna get more specific about it. And basically, it's this. It's kind of. It is a crude tool of control to not allow the person under you context for what you may or may not be feeling,
That's what I'm talking about.
because then it gives you something that you can use against them as a kind of blunt object. It's like, well, why don't you know why I'm mad? Or why don't you know why I'm upset? Like that's, it's like, it's a crude, really basic, imbalanced, and I think essentially destructive and self-defeating tool of control. It is without nuance. If you can position yourself, this is my belief. If you can position yourself as a human being, whatever that means to you, a human being who is fluid, who changes, who has moods, who might be a bit capricious if that's your jam, who isn't going to necessarily be entirely the same day to day. If you can position yourself as that person and find someone who is drawn to you and drawn to take power receptive position to you anyway, then that is some gold shit right there.
I want
That
to add to
is,
the anyway because of.
or regardless of, right? Like, if you can be a person and have another person choose, constantly choose, regardless of whatever shit mood you might be on the day, to continue to put themselves, to place themselves in that position to you, to want to give you access to them. And here's another thing I'm going to say. This isn't only from D type to S type. This is also from S type to D type,
mm-hmm.
right? But if you can be somebody who is a person who is able to say, this is the place that I'm in right now, regardless of the place that I am in right now, I am still yours.
Right.
Or from my perspective, regardless of the place that I am in right now, regardless of the mood that I'm in, regardless of anything about the way that I am right now, do not doubt that you are my girl. Like, don't, you have to have permission. You have to be able to give yourself permission to have an off day, but not have that off day suddenly determine everything about how you are engaging with this particular person. And part of that, a tool to allow that to happen, is transparency, because with that kind of transparency comes a more realistic, yes, hello Coco, comes a more realistic idea of who it is that you are engaging with,
right,
in a total and complete sense. Again, that's not the same thing as radical honesty, because that's one of the things that people say that they want and nobody really wants.
Yeah, the radical honesty thing is challenging, because defining what that means and the degree of radicalness varies so much from person to person and also from day to day.
You know,
and I think a lot of people mistake radical honesty for cruelty.
Yes.
And a lot of radical honesty, I personally, for me, does not work, and actually is kind of cruel. You know, like, I'm just like, nope, you need to find a better way to say that. Let me put that as a challenge to you. And I've had, let me think about this. Yes, I will say, in all of my prior formally acknowledged as DS or MS based relationships, the dominant type wanted the freedom to have the radical honesty thing. And one of the things I challenged them with was, I do not function well in that dynamic. I need you to be nice. And it's funny because, like, other people who were involved with them would be like, oh my God, why aren't they doing this? Or why are they treating you this special way? I'm like, it's not that it's special. I have a pretty detailed instruction manual. I'm absolutely happy to give it to the person who's trying to run my shit.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what I'm going to tell you is, if you are reading my beads and I am in a place where I am so vulnerable, where everything you say hits the core, you probably aren't prepared to deal with the aftermath of fucking my shit up that badly.
You can
mitigate that by being a little nice. So your radical honesty, in terms of my psyche, is extremely is potentially extremely damaging. And I want to give that respect. I want that respect given to me, and I want to give that respect to the people to whom I submit, because I understand their vulnerability as well. I understand, not from a firsthand POV, but from an empathy point of view, how vulnerable that situation is when you are the boss of somebody. There is a great deal of vulnerability there, and I try to acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's sometimes I would think that a person who is more interested in radical honesty than being nice, and not that being nice doesn't mean that you can't be mean every once in a while, right? Sort of like wonderfully, pleasantly, selectively mean. I think that that's we can generally agree that that's a good thing.
Yes.
Every so often, right?
Sometimes mean is,
sometimes mean is the desired result. So, but I feel that somebody who wants to say, well, I'm just going to be radically honest, and if you can't deal with it, tough,
right,
is actually not interested in a person.
Mm.
They're interested in having a position be filled. But if you are interested in the person in that position for you, right, it behooves you to do what you can to preserve the health and well-being of that person.
You know, I wonder, though, right? For many people, well, it seems fucking obvious, doesn't it? But I'm going to tell you, as someone who has been out in the trenches and seeing the world from the eyes of dungeons and classrooms and everything all over the world, I can tell you the idea of treating the person who was the submissive or the bottom of the slave as a full human being, as someone with needs that needs need to be met, and that you do bear a responsibility to have some degree of compassion and a degree of reciprocity is not the common baseline.
Well, no, that's because it's breaking the story, right? It's breaking the narrative. The narrative is that that is not necessarily required because we're talking about these like strict hierarchical power structures. And if that's the story, human beings don't like to break stories, right? They don't like to break patterns. Breaking patterns is hard. Maintaining a pattern is the easiest fucking thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Breaking a pattern often sucks because the reason that we as human beings stick to patterns, generally speaking, is because they're easy and they reward.
Right. Even if the reward is something that is not awesome.
Even if the reward is something that is not awesome in a long term, even if the reward is something that we can't recognize as being not awesome,
mm-hmm.
like we don't, even if the pattern is actually something that is constantly and consistently self-destructive.
Yep.
Part of the pattern, part of the story that we can get trapped in is like, no, everything's fine. Right. Or this is what I deserve. Right. This is how it's supposed to go. Like all of these stories that are essentially patterns or learned behavior. It's really hard to break out of that. And so if that's what people are coming in with, and if that's the general perception of the way that relationships inside of these sort of super overt kink based power dynamic relationships, right? Mm-hmm. If that's the way that they're supposed to go, and that's the general belief of that's how they're supposed to go, there's no, again, run a cost benefit. And in the short term thinking, there is no benefit to trying to break that story. A few episodes ago, we talked about the notion of like hunger, coming into the community with hunger, right. And that to resist the hunger is very often making the choice that is not fun.
Yes.
That is not like that does not support instant gratification. That does not support the immediate good times.
No.
Right? Breaking the pattern, breaking this kind of a pattern does do the same thing. It can make you question and might make you less attractive to somebody else in the immediate good times. That doesn't make it any less valuable a choice to do, but it certainly is the harder choice.
No, it is hard, and, you know, without my getting super emo about my own shit, which I'm trying to not do right now because I'm like, because that really strikes a deep chord. It's really difficult. And if I were to pare down my experience in submission, it all pairs down to the baseline level of I need to do more. It's not just willing in that dynamic. Mm-hmm. It's my need is to be like as far as I can possibly go. And on the upside, I have been with people who are ethical enough to realize that they are not going to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why those relationships have not worked out. And it's not fun. And it's not awesome. And it is frustrating. Ultimately, the integrity of maintaining that core is more important to me, but I don't see that broadly supported. I don't see that being the thing that people strive to do. People don't say, I'm going to come into the community and maintain my integrity, goddammit.
No.
People come into the community and say, I'm going to come into the community, I'm going to fuck, and I'm going to get my ass beaten, and I'm going to beat people's asses, I'm going to do all these really cool things, and this is going to be great. You know.
Have you ever read anything by Cory Doctorow?
I have. The Cory Doctorow is the... I was like, this is not a pervert person.
No. Not even at all.
I was like, either Boing Boing or Laughing Squid,
yep.
Or one of the...
Yep.
Okay.
So Cory Doctorow is one of the original... I believe he's one of the founding editors of Boing Boing.
Yeah,
He's an author. He's Canadian, currently lives in London, but he's from...
I love Toronto. How you had to like drop that in there.
You know...
Represent.
What is it? Is that what I'm supposed to say? Or props? Am I supposed to say props? I think props is also appropriate to say.
Well, if you are giving a shout out to him for his Canadian-ness,
okay.
you would do the represent shout. That would be that was because you're representing or repping, as we say.
All right. I bow to your expertise in this field.
That has been the negrifying of John Patrick for this episode.
Slowly but surely. So one of my favorite books by Cory Doctorow is a book called Eastern Standard Tribe. And the first sort of scene of the book, or a sort of really key scene of the book, is a guy who has locked himself accidentally on the roof of an insane asylum that he's been put in under false pretenses as part of a conspiracy to remove him from this business that he was involved in. And he's sitting up on the roof in the like baking hot sun. He's got a sharpened pencil in his hand, and
what the hell?
And the point of it, he's put up his nose. And he's sitting on the roof, and he's thinking about the situation that he's in, and he's thinking to himself, I could jam this pencil up into my brain, give myself a lobotomy, and just be happy. Or I could take the pencil out of my brain and I can be smart. And the overarching idea behind the book is, would you rather be smart than happy?
Right.
And like, smart doesn't necessarily mean intelligent in this case, right? Smart is aware, right? Are you going to look at the truth of things and go from that position, or are you going to take steps to ignore the truth of things and therefore possibly be happy? In the book, the character decides that he wants to be smart. And I remember reading this and going, yep, of course you want to be smart. Why wouldn't you want to be smart? Like, why wouldn't you want to be able to sort of face the facts? Like, why, you know, deal with what is actually in front of you, not what you would like to see in front of you. Because what you would like to see in front of you is not actually there.
Yeah, but that's a rather sophisticated approach, yeah?
Is it?
Yes.
Like, look at the truth of things is a sophisticated approach?
Yes.
All right.
It is. And I will say that because I'm willing to bet that if you were to do a poll of most people, well, in America at least, and you could have them either know all of the things or be blissfully ignorant, I'm willing to bet you get a lot of blissful ignorant people. And I'm willing to bet there's a lot of people who are super smart who'd be like, you know what, fuck it, I can't take the strain anymore. There, you know, and I have those days. I've had those days quite a bit in the past couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
Where I've just said, you know what, I wish I did not know as much as I do, because it hurts every second that I'm awake. Where
right.
I'm just like, this sucks. This knowledge sucks. This information sucks. And I don't know what to do with it. But by the same token, in terms of self-knowledge, when it comes to DS stuff, to King stuff, obviously I've devoted quite a while to thinking about this shit. So obviously I believe it to be important. And I know it to definitely be important in terms of getting my needs met. If I can't tell someone what my needs are, my getting them met is a small, tiny possibility, and it shrinks every second.
Yeah, and the same thing goes with me. Like, I need to be able to articulate what it is that I want, why it is that I want it, in order to make sure that, in order to increase the chances that it can happen in a way that is mutually beneficial.
Right. And the why, and again, this comes back to the transparency thing. Knowing why is important, because when you know why, first of all, I believe that your communication is more effective, and also you're able to let the people who are around you know what the fuck is going on with you. And when you cannot, I believe at that point it becomes, it's not as profound, it's not as elegant. If you're just like, do this task because I told you to, because I am the dominant, I am the master. And every time I see or hear that kind of language, it's coming from a place where someone is doing some skivy shit. Each and every time, like without fail, when someone's like, "Well, I am the, I am the this, and my word goes," I'm like, "Yes, but now you are using that power that you only have because someone has said yes to obeying you. You are using that power now to subjugate them in a way that is not ethical."
Yeah, being a dominant isn't the same thing as like you don't get like a get out of asshole free card.
But hello, but you see people playing that shit all the time. All the fucking time.
Yeah, but partially why they're getting, but it's partially why they're allowed to play that card is because they are permitted to continue to play that card because people accept it, right? People
Yes.
take the card and be like, "Oh shit, you've got this card. Let me toss it on back here with my collection of 18 bajillion other of these cards." I guess you just constantly print them up, right? Because my collection back here isn't getting any smaller. Like, I'm not saying that the people who are throwing those cards around shouldn't be sort of checking their own behavior, but I also do feel like there's got to be a certain amount of there's got to be
Complicity?
a of yeah.
Yeah, there is. And that is part of the frustration that I experience when I look at the way that submissive people devalue themselves, accept really shit behavior, and refuse to take personal responsibility, because if they don't take personal responsibility and they're treated poorly, it's entirely 100% the fault of the other person, and they get to, curl up in the victim position. Versus saying, you know what, this person's kind of a jerk and I'm not going to stick around for it. Or this person's kind of a jerk, I'm going to call them on it and then behave appropriately depending on how they react to my, calling them out. And the system is built very tightly to make it so that dominant people aren't necessarily accountable.
It's, I mean, you're right. It also gets back to smart versus happy. That in that situation, the fear of having nothing might outweigh the distaste for what's happening. Sucks large, but it's one of those things that, I mean, it's, very, 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 very few people want to be alone.
Right.
And so there's more of a chance, especially, and this is also something that we've talked about before, a few episodes ago. I'm going to say it's around episode 4 or 5. And if you haven't listened to them, I recommend that you do.
Well
Also,
played,
you
well
should listen to
played.
all of these things in order because the kind of jumping around we do might be a bit,
It's just like, what the fuck are they on about now?
yeah, seriously. Anyway, the idea of, you're hungry for something, you're looking for something for so long, you don't feel like you're ever going to get it.
Yeah.
You find yourself in a situation where you have access to it. You find yourself in a situation where you're looking around going, "Holy shit, all these other people want the same thing that I do. I got to step up to make sure that I get it." Because that's the other thing. It's really hard to make human beings not competitive.
Yeah. Or if it's not that you're stepping up, it's that you're actually stepping down and short selling. Yeah. It's like, if this person requires this amount of attention from you in order to qualify as being in a relationship with you, I'll see that bid and I'll say, you only have to call me once a month. And you don't have to worry about meeting my emotional needs. And if I have a bad day, you don't have to call me and listen to my, weeping or gnashing of teeth or yelling or freaking out. How's that? We can still have this great relationship and call it, what we want, but you don't have to actually do any of the work. How's that going to go? And a lot of people will roll up to that offer and say, yeah, that sounds great. What I don't have to do any of this other shit. Fantastic. Thank you.
And then that behavioral framework becomes recognized as the most attractive, and so therefore it becomes easier for other people to just fall into that pattern. Now, having said all of this, right, and it works for both D types and S types, like, let's just be real, it works for all people. Having said that, it is always valuable, I think, to look at the amount of conversations like this that are happening in a way to as a way of recognizing that while they're while it might be slow, that there is actual change that is going on.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's... it's funny. I mean, you could talk about blogs, and this is actually an interesting sort of curl around to bring us back to online conversations.
I was thinking reach around, but okay.
It's a blog reach around. It's a blog reach around is what it is. That there are more people who are there are okay. So there are probably. And you can agree, you can tell me if I'm wrong here, but there are probably more S-type bloggers who are having realistic conversations about what it means to engage in submission, in service, in slavery, than are having the iconic descriptions of what it means.
I'm totally
prepared to be proved wrong.
I couldn't prove it. I will say my feeling mm-hmm. is that it's getting closer to 50-50.
Okay.
And the metric that I'm using is what I see, and it's the metric of the people, the conversations that I see on FetLife, the stuff that I see when I see sex bloggers mm-hmm. writing about kinky stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can look at like a roundup, for example, on eLust, which is, you know, a roundup of sex blogs.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that people are clicking on and loving and elevating are the ones that are about the sex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not necessarily the emotional process that people want to hear, because that's not necessarily sexy.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely more conversations are happening. But there is also a way in which our voices... from a standpoint of people who want to talk about the emotional aspect of it, mm-hmm. and certainly and definitely from a standpoint of submission, you know, like I looked at the past few leather events that specifically have to do with master-slave issues, and the number of people who are submissives or slaves presenting and teaching is starting to sink again. Like there was a bubble 5 or 6 years ago where I was seeing a lot more names, and now it's moving slowly in the other direction again.
Mm.
And when I am seeing people who are submissive kind of putting themselves out there, oftentimes you will see people talking about how wonderful their relationships are. You will see people talking about what they're longing to find, or gnashing their teeth over some pain of loss.
Mm-hmm.
But realistic depictions of the day-to-day are still on the rise. It's still not the most common thing you will see. And okay. Again, that might play again to a vulnerability.
Yeah, it may also, it's something that I had when you messaged me earlier tonight and said that the blogging was something that you wanted to talk about. One of the first things that I thought of is FetLife and the degree to which the existence of FetLife profiles and more specifically FetLife threads make having an off FetLife blog less valuable to some people
mm-hmm.
or less likely that they'll even bother to take it up because they can post all of their writing on Fet.
Right. And so, and that's great and that's fine. And not everyone needs to have an offline presence, you know?
It is and it isn't though. It is if everybody's interested in speaking inside of the walled garden.
Right.
But it's and again, only for those people who only for those people who are inside the sort of the first bubble, right? The really sort of the bubble of sex positivity that includes kink folk who may not be out but who feel like they can engage in something like FetLife. And are comfortable enough to, you know, maybe they're just lurking, maybe they're not, but they're engaging in some way or another, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have the sort of the outside folks who are like, I don't even know, what do? Do you hit each other with baseball bats? Like the complete lack of awareness, right? Or, you know, some of them might be more aware than they think, but
yeah.
Right? But then there's sort of like the second layer of bubble, which are those people who are genuinely drawn to kink, who are genuinely drawn to power, who are drawn to fetish, who are drawn to whatever, you know, non...
For fuck's sake. See, this is...